Well, now we head off to Indonesia with some similar patterns to what we've just heard about in Iran. Yes, that's the very spirited singing of Ahok supporters who broke out in song to form a spontaneous choir. Didn't sound very spontaneous, did it? Sounded pretty impressive. At City Hall in Jakarta with the well-respected conductor Addy MS. And it doesn't seem that long ago that we played here on Saturday Extra the little jingle that supporters around the world were performing to support the governor known as Ahok, Basuki Jahaja Purnama. That merriment has, of course, turned to shock with his sentencing this week to 2 years in prison for blasphemy against Islam, a sentence the prosecutors of the case weren't even pursuing as the charge had been downgraded. As headlines have been summing up, mob politics has brought down Jakarta's Christian governor. It's a decision dividing the capital, putting pressure too on President Joko Widodo, a friend and political ally of Ahok's. So joining me to discuss what's happening there right now and what it might mean for a country that knows only too well how religious tensions can tear the nation apart, I'm joined by two observers who've been keeping us up to date, Tobias Basuki from the Department of Politics and International Relations at the Centre for Strategic and International Studies in Jakarta, and Greg Feely, Associate Professor and Senior Fellow of Indonesian Politics at the ANU's College of Asia and Pacific, also in Jakarta. Welcome to you both.
Hello, Geraldine.
Thanks for having it.
Greg, honestly, were you surprised by this conviction?
It was always on the cards for several reasons. Judges in Indonesia are very mindful of public opinion and they're very reluctant to make deeply unpopular decisions. And there's been so much community emotion over the Ahok issue, much of it hostile, that it was always on the cards that they could overturn the prosecutor's recommendation that he receive a suspended sentence and reinstate the full blasphemy charges, which would mean a definite jail sentence for him. So I think they looked at the fact that Ahok lost the second round of the Jakarta gubernatorial election a few weeks ago, that public opinion was still strongly of the belief that he was a blasphemer. Not everyone, but well over half respondents said that. And also,
but where were they questioned? When you like the result of the election doesn't hinge on that, does it?
Oh, I think it does actually. I mean, there's much debate about this among scholars, but I think there's a great deal now of quantitative data and survey data that shows that the key factor in his defeat was religion, that more than two-thirds of Jakartans believed that he'd been an effective governor, but the reason that they wouldn't vote for him was because they believed he'd insulted Islam.
Tobias, not everyone is in shock, of course. The General Secretary of Indonesia's second largest Islamic organisation, I think it's NU, no, it was Muhammadiyah actually, called the verdict a fair, elegant resolution. It's hard to see that from Australia.
Yeah, well, definitely. I think some groups had wanted that. But I actually, before we go on that part, I believe that Ahok lost because of religion. But I think there's much more to it, to the judge's conviction. I think it's also backroom political dealing by those entrenched political interests. So this is not just mob pressure on his conviction. One recent survey shows, okay, there's 40% who's core supporters of Ahok, 40% of the voters who were core for Anis with the religious element, and 20% who were in the middle. The 20% who, in addition, were made up to the near 60% of Anis's vote were actually influenced by religion, but not necessarily thought that Ahok blasphemed. So one recent survey showed only 40% of the core, 40% of the Jakarta respondents think Ahok blasphemed. So what happened with the court decision, I'm very suspicious of political parties wanting to access the Jakarta budget, including the involvement of Vice President Kala. And that's why I think this was just not just mob pressure, especially the fact that Ahok was the incumbent governor was immediately detained. He still has his term until October. But political parties, I think, are afraid to get nothing once the opposition takes over. So hence, we see the immediate detainment as an attempt to take over Jakarta government and access its budget. So I think this is a two-pronged attack against Ahok.
Goodness, that's a very big claim. So is this like the re-establishment of the old guard or something, as people have put it to me? You know, what's the end game here, Tobias, before I come back to Greg?
To some extent, yes and no. Of course, the old guard has been hurting a lot with the appearance of the so-called new wave of politicians, President Widodo, Governor Ahok, and other politicians like Ridwan Kamil. So, especially in Jakarta, having 70 trillion rupiah, the biggest regional budget of all the 34 provinces, that's where the source of money for political parties come from. Under Ahok's government, they have been run dry. So, of course, it's a big claim to accuse political parties to be behind it, but there's a lot of hints pointing at it, including the head of the Supreme Court, Hatta Ali, is a very close confidant of Yusuf Kala. So that's something that remains to be studied and investigated as well.
What's your view about that, Greg?
It's certainly a possibility, but some of the academics who follow very closely the behaviour of the judiciary in Indonesia say that there's been a very common pattern in the last 10 years or so for judges to nearly always go with what they believe to be public opinion. So in this case, we had the election result, we had the survey results, we also had fairly constant large numbers of Islamists present at the court, keeping the pressure on the judges. And so I think the judges would have feared if they had found Ahok not guilty or not jailed him, there would have been unrest of the court, perhaps their cars might have been trashed. They went to their local mosques, or then perhaps people would have been pointing fingers at them saying, you let off a blasphemer, you didn't defend your faith. I think there's a lot of those social pressures at work here. I agree entirely with Tobias that this is actually an incredibly complex set of dynamics here. There's issues of race, issues of religion in there, and issues of material interests of some of the mafia in Jakarta that Tobias has spoken about, the people who've lost contracts under Ahok's reform program and desperately want them back. So all of those things are true. But I'll just come out with one figure. Surveys show that 58% of Jakartans believed that Ahok was a blasphemer. That's exactly the vote that Anies Baswedan got. We know that as soon as blasphemy charges were levelled against him in September of last year, his support began dropping dramatically. Most of the survey data points to that being people rejecting him because of what they believed were his unacceptable religious views.
Look, we all know that Indonesians are obsessed with social media, and of course I was reminded that in fact it was only when the Ahok speech out on the remote island was uploaded to YouTube that it even became an issue. So, and people have been tweeting, some have tweeted, "Dear journalists, not all the people who demand justice for Ahok are Ahokers." You know, in other words, supporters. Mm. There are also the defenders of civil and human rights. Having a justice system you believe in is at the bedrock of democracy, is it not? So, Tobias, do you think this is, you know, it is being seen from outside as a portent of something far bigger for Indonesia. Is it being seen like that inside Indonesia?
Inside Indonesia, especially in Jakarta, I think at least those who voted for Anies really narrating it as an Ahoker, supporters of Ahok protest. But as we've seen, that the protest in support of Ahok and the demand for the release went nationwide. It went to North Sulawesi, Manado, it went to Bali, it went to Jogja, Central Java, which is not even Jogja is also a Muslim majority. So it actually shows there's a huge concern of Indonesia's pluralism. And so, of course, people were in support of Ahok for various reasons, but this is not, again, I agree, not just about Ahok as a politician or individual. This is bigger than him.
This is a symbol.
This is actually the nation's identity of being pluralistic under attack.
I mean, there's a very interesting piece by John McBeth, who's a very veteran coverer of Indonesia, who wrote a piece in the South China Morning Post, I think it is, just saying that worrying about the 2019 general election already, that while successive Indonesian governments have been slow to react to hate speech and violence against minorities, they've always taken a stern approach to terrorism or anything else that presents a direct challenge to the state itself. Would you agree, Greg, that the hate speech aspect of it, which can so stir up emotions, and, you know, any democratic country's got to be very careful of it, you know, is there a real worry about the 2019 election?
This is one of the big things that observers, commentators are discussing, is are the dynamics of the Jakarta gubernatorial election replicable in the presidential election in 2019? Ahok gave a very particular atmosphere to this election because the fact he is Chinese and he's Christian, and also because he's been so outspoken and he's alienated many sections of the community.
I'm told that even his own Chinese community were quite divided, some annoyed with him for putting everything they'd achieved at sort of at risk, and others just supporting him.
Indeed. And they had warned him, many of those people had warned him, don't make unnecessary problems for yourself by talking about Islam, but he continued to do so. Even within days of the election, the second round of the election, he was still making comments that should have been controversial. So he could never really leave the issue alone. And so he's brought some of this on himself. The question is, we know that Islamist movements believe that they now have a pattern, that they, a strategy that they can use for other people, not just non-Muslims, but also people like Jokowi, who they believe is vulnerable on religious and so-called inequality issues. And so the National Ulama Council, for example, has, I'm told, issued a religious ruling, a fatwa on inequality. And the same Islamist groups that mobilised so effectively against Ahok are planning to use this fatwa as part of a broader campaign now, and it's a campaign against what they see as Chinese dominance of the economy, of non-Muslims not getting their proper share of the wealth, and they believe this is one of the things they can use to build something much bigger than an election victory, but rather build a different kind of politics in Indonesia, one where Islam is far more assertive and has much more of a set of economic demands that will be much more to their liking.
And final word to you, Tobias. Do you worry about, well, what do you think is going to happen in 2019 now?
Well, of course, it's heading. I think part of the huge protest still demanding the a greater sentence for Ahok is part of the keeping the momentum towards 2019. But before that, we have also a stepping stone, the 2018 regional elections, in which one of the biggest provinces will have its regional election, West Java, Central Java, and East Java. So that's what's going to happen. The biggest problem is now the Islamist forces, which had been actually on the outskirts, managed to move into the mainstream. And precisely because of that, politicians had never been sure on how to counter this. Like you mentioned, the government had been very stern against terrorists, but not against hardline Islamists, because in part, they are not sure what the majority Muslims are thinking. And the second thing is because some of the leaders from the big Muslim majority groups are actually playing eyes to gain a political foothold. So they're always, what's that called, narrating to be in somewhat in alliance with the hardline Islamists when it is beneficial for them. And that's why the government and politicians, whether be it from former President Yudhoyono till now President Jokowi, they had been very afraid to touch this hornet's nest of Islam.
And we have to go, but of course it was under SBY that all the prosecutions for blasphemy really started, 106 under his watch. Look, yes. Thank you both very much indeed, Greg Feely and Tobias Basuki. I appreciate your insights.
Thanks, Geraldine.
It's a pleasure.